Welcome to the Agent of Wealth podcast with Mark Boutis from Boutis Financial. In this podcast, Mark helps guide you towards financial freedom, ensure you never run out of money, and create a balance in life that prioritizes what is most important to you. Join us for this journey as Mark draws from years of expertise and guest experts to solve the multiple wealth building challenges involved in your financial life.
Welcome back to The Agent of Wealth. This is your host, Mark Boutis. Today, I'm joined by a special guest, Lori Barkman. Lori, the business transitioned Sherpa, is a former CEO of a $100 million revenue company that was sold to a Fortune 50 company. As a mergers and acquisitions advisor, Lori provides a structured process for business owners to plan successful transition of their companies. Lori is the author of The Business Transition Work Handbook, How to Avoid Succession Pitfalls and Create Valuable Exit Options. The book demystifies the often overwhelming exit process, guiding business owners who are considering leaving their ventures or simply beginning to think about their next steps. She's an adjunct professor of entrepreneurship at Carnegie Mellon University and hosts the award-winning podcast Succession Stories, where she speaks with hundreds of entrepreneurs who've shared their journeys through succession. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. I'm so excited to be here.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there. A lot of them, you know, some love what they're doing, never want to get out. And then some are looking to transition and are just not sure. It's like, you know, you mentioned it's complicated. What should a business owner be doing now if they're thinking about maybe selling their company in the next couple of years?
Yeah, let's just recognize the reality. You just said it. 100% of business owners are going to leave their company one day. And it's amazing to me that so few of them, less than 10%, have a written and communicated plan. If you have a plan, not even a plan, just ideas or questions swirling in your head, what's the chances of that coming to fruition? Too many times, business owners have things out of their control happening to them rather than having a purposeful, planned, have intentions for their future exit. So my mission is to work with business owners to help them set the stage, set the course. And it's not like you have to do this on day one, but I have met so many people, even in the educational environment. If you take an entrepreneurship class and they're going to help you decide on your business, one of the questions they may ask you on day one is who you're selling your business to. I think that's fantastic. The earlier, the more time we have to plan, reverse engineer, let's create value, let's build. But at the same time, let's have a mindset for, hey, one day we're going to let this go.
Yeah.
And are we going to be on, boots off? You know, everyone's leaving one day.
And I, you know, you hear the term like the accidental entrepreneur, of someone who gets into owning a business or starting a business kind of accidentally, but you probably don't see it too often on the exit side. And there probably needs to be more planning involved to have a successful transition out.
Oh, I absolutely. There's a lot of statistics out there, one of which is 8 out of 10 companies in the lower middle market that have an intention to sell don't. Yeah. That's a pretty big number. That means 2 out of 10 do successfully. Yeah. So what happens to the other 8 out of 10? You've worked so hard. You've put a lot of energy and time into the business you've created, or if it's a family business and you're the next gen, why just leave all that money on the table? You know, I've had clients have regret that they didn't work earlier on some of these things. For example, when you have very loyal employees that are with you 20 plus years, that's amazing. The challenge is that if they are your age, you're all going to reach retirement age together. And that's what happened. He's in his early 60s. His key people are in their early 60s. And when the buyers were looking at the business, they're going, who's going to stay on? Who's going to run this thing? Who's actually going to transition? And if you have a service business, that becomes even more exacerbated versus a product business. And so many companies out there have created value and know-how, and it's about the people. It's about the know-how. How do you transfer that? So when I work with clients on understanding what are those assets they have, it doesn't have to be a physical asset. That's not the table and chairs we care about. It's the know-how. If you have intellectual property, if you have client relationships, are those client relationships papered or are they handshake? How transferable of this asset list we put together? How transferable are all of these things? And what's the perceived value by potential buyers?
I know every like transition is probably different, but is there a right time that someone should engage with someone like yourself, or even just put a plan together on transitioning out of their business? Is it, you know, a year out, 3 years out? Is it something they should do, even if they don't even think, or if they're not even thinking about yet transitioning out. And that's just part of a business, you know, it's part of their regular business plan.
I'd love to see this be part of the regular business plan. It's kind of like I was saying earlier, where there are some entrepreneurial courses being taught. And one of the questions that's being asked is, think about your exit plan early on. I think it's more common, Mark, in the venture capital space. If there's a technology company and people are looking for venture investment, the venture capitalists are looking for the exit. What's that time horizon and how big could this be? Most everyday businesses don't necessarily think that way. And so I get this question a lot. And of course, the answer is it depends. I think the sweet spot can be for some entrepreneurs, maybe by age or stage, we can kind of talk about it. Where are they? If you're in your 30s, you're building, and maybe you have a mountain climber mentality and you want to build and then build another one and be a serial entrepreneur, you're probably already wired for that. But if you are in your 50s and your 60s and you're looking at this window of time to say, hey, what do I need to do to get ready? Then my short answer is 5 years, 7 years is probably pushing it. If we give ourselves 10 years, that is a comfortable amount of time. And some people say, oh, wait, that sounds like a lot of time. Yeah, but let's unpack it. And also, of where are we baselining now? What's the value of business now? What's the nest egg you think you need for yourself and your family to be able to, you know, sustain your lifestyle after you leave the company? What's that nest egg you need? And how much time do you have to get there? And so the math is inclusive of what's the business value? What's this nest egg you need in totality, given your other assets and liabilities, for a total picture of your net worth, and a work back number on, well, what's the magic number we need for your business from the net proceeds standpoint? And do we have a gap? And if we do, well, how many years do you have to close that gap? So intuitively, the more years we have to address this, to create value and understand where it is we're headed, then we have more, hopefully more options on the table to maximize value and create that value. So when the time comes to exit on your terms.
Are there certain things that can be done to, you know, kind of maximize, like, so let's say it is 5 years out, 3 years out, that they can do now to maximize that value in anticipation of a sale? I kind of equate it to like someone selling their house, right? They say, oh, I want to sell my house. And they have to weigh whether making some improvement to that house is the whatever resources it takes to make that improvement, is whether it's worth it. And they're going to see on the on the resale. Is it a similar concept on the business side?
Yeah, absolutely, it is. And I love the analogy of the homeowner, because we can all get our head around that. You know, if you're going to wait to sell your house to renovate your bathroom and your kitchen, okay, you're going to probably get good value from that. But the other part of it is, well, you lived in your house for 10 years with that kitchen and bathroom. Why did you wait so long? You didn't get to enjoy it. So the good news in all of this, Mark, is that owners who are concerned about the enterprise value of their business, the owner's metric, that's the number they should really care about, is what is the enterprise value of their business? And all the things that I might suggest on this podcast today are things that are going to help you create economic value in your company and hopefully make it more enjoyable to run. So the big, big takeaway I want everyone to hear is, don't do exit planning when you're exiting. It's too late. Kind of like my mom renovating the kitchen when she was selling the house. I'm like, Mom, why didn't we do this 20 years ago? You know, we could have enjoyed it. So yes, the short answer is there are definitely things we can do. One of the first things to start with is asset protection. Do we see our business as an asset, or do we see it as a job? If we see it as a job, it may have different characteristics for us than if we see our business as an asset. And what do we want to do with assets? We want to protect value. We want to grow value. We want to protect value. So sometimes we start out with contingency planning discussions. If you're the owner of your business and you own 100% of it, and you are no longer able to serve, I'll say it that way, right? You can interpret that any which way you want. It's, you know, you are incapacitated, or you've died, or someone in your family is incapacitated and you're no longer able to serve in the same role because of time constraints. What will happen to your business? It's very extreme to think about the death case, but of course that happens. You know, you may have heard about the concept of the five D's, and the five D's include death, divorce, disruption, you know, from disaster. Let's think of COVID. COVID was an example, an extreme example of something that a business owner doesn't control, but it had an impact on our business. It may have impacted business value because of disruptions to supply chain and other things. Labor costs have gone up and it disrupted the markets a bit. In that case, when there's an element of something out of our control that affects our business value, like a death, you know, what could happen? And if the business goes to your spouse and the spouse is not working in the business, has no knowledge of the business, how likely are your key people going to stay on? What's the dynamic there with your customers? And it can become a downward spiral very quickly. And sharks start swirling. If the company is going on for sale, maybe it's a fire sale. It's a liquidation sale. It's certainly going to sell for a discount, not a premium. So we'd look to put some protections in place. That's just one example. Is there's some solutions around, you know, the ownership side in the case of the owner not being able to serve in the same capacity. There's other risks that we'll want to take a look at too. And I kind of hinted at some of them. One is related to your suppliers. Do you have any supplier concentration risks or other risks with supplier relationships that need to be addressed? One example is with a online business that has put all their marketing eggs in one basket, which in this case was Facebook. Well, what happens if Facebook, which they can determine that they might want to turn off your campaigns and you no longer have Facebook ads driving new customers to your business? Where do you go from there? That's a very real example of a disruption and a risk to address proactively. Another risk that we probably should take a look at is employee risk. Which employees in your business, if they leave, would be detrimental to the company? And you might be one of those employees on the list. You might be number one because you know just where to kick that machine to get it to work. And you have the relationships with the customers and you're the number one salesperson and you're the chief firefighter and solution solver and the list goes on and on. And all those things add up to risk.
Going back to contingency planning and kind of what you're talking about, some of these risks, is contingency planning, if like, let's say one of those 5Ds happen or, you know, something happens and you can't serve in your business, that after the event happens, that would trigger the contingency plan? Or is it to maximize the value, you almost kind of plan to run the business without you even there? So like, how can the business operate with you not, you know, I guess you're if being on top rather than you are the key to, you're not there, the business just doesn't run.
Yeah, it's really both. And it obviously depends on the organization. I have a client that's about $5 million in revenue and he's president, very day to day. He's got a controller and he has a director of ops and he's setting his sights to be a larger company one day. But this is the reality of where he's at. It's a fairly small team. It's a fairly small management team. And so he has to be in the business every day. But I've been talking with him about a buy-sell agreement. How would that be structured? If he has someone currently in his team that he thinks could be, would make sense to be part of a buy-sell agreement, setting up a separate LLC, funding with insurance and things of that nature. I have another client where her sister-in-law is in the business and she's setting up a buy-sell agreement with her sister-in-law. So if something happens to her, then she knows the company will, you know, be in her sister's hands, again, funded through this insurance policy. For others, it's also, like you said, it's this realization that our business is going to be worth less if it's a very owner-dependent business. The earlier we recognize that, the better. And the more resources we have to do something, then that's good too. Not all companies have the ability to add a second in command and to add a deep bench, or at least not right away. But they can set their sights to it, or they might say, you know what? And I talk about this on my podcast. I've had a number of people who say, I was willing to make that investment in my executive team. And even though I really couldn't afford it, but I knew it would pay off. And for them, it definitely did in terms of, like you said, you know, Mark, the ability to step out and that transferability of the business. It wasn't so owner dependent. He had key people that could take on other roles. Most commonly, we see the challenge around sales and marketing. being very owner-led. Another role is product or service, either in creation or delivery. So the backup to you, who is that person? What's their skill set? Some people say, get someone that balances you out. If you're not necessary, you're the visionary and you really need an integrator, you need that financial person. Okay, that's one line of thought. Other people who I've talked to say, well, I'm really good at those things. And that's exactly who I wanted to get on my team so that they could replace me literally. And I love hearing that because that's not the most common path. It's the yin yang, you know, that we normally hear. Oh, they balance me out. I'm not good at those things. So I need that person on my team. But it was clever for one of the folks on my podcast and how she thought about it. And it ultimately enabled her to step out in a very productive way because she had that person on her team who could step into where she was day to day.
You know, you mentioned these serial entrepreneurs, and I'm sure they've gone through multiple times where they've gone through some kind of transition. But for most people, they've worked in their business their entire lives, and it's kind of this one, you know, scary, complex. They have no idea what they should be doing. What do they do? Is there like a, how do you help in let's say, like in that capacity? Or is there a checklist? Or is there, let's say, all right, here's the playbook on how you, and I'm sure like the playbook is, yeah, it's useful, but everyone's situation is going to be different. You know, how does someone go into this unknown and kind of piece it out?
Well, that's why I wrote the book, The Business Transition Handbook. And we start the chapters. Each chapter is a pitfall to avoid. And what can we work on? And I was very purposeful and I had an intention. If I'm the entrepreneur reading this book, what are those things I want to try to do or avoid doing? And I also laid it out so that we worked on certain things up front, which are too easy to kick the can. And it's just directly hitting your question, which is personal transition, personal readiness, the mindset necessary for transition is to be open-minded and be leaning in on what this means for you and your business. If we resist these things, it can be negative versus more of a positive. If we see more of this positive pull, we call pull factors, pulling us into something we're excited about, we're more likely to work on it and spend time on it and therefore increase the value inherently in our business. If we are leaning in on these concepts that transition takes time, transition is a good thing. It's a natural thing. And by the way, it's also going to create value in your company. So it's kind of like, why wouldn't you do it? We just need to know what to do. And starting out with one of the assessments, I have a number of assessments, one of which is a personal readiness assessment. It's available on my website if people want to check it out. And it should help them answer a couple key questions. It's a starting line. It's not a finish line. This is a conversation and an after conversation. And it's important to not kick the can on some of these things. Just like I said earlier, you can't do exit planning when you're exiting. It's also difficult to figure out, well, what am I going to do next when your next is tomorrow? You know, you need to give yourself some latitude. And it's the classic important, not urgent, right? We're not working on it. We're not thinking about it. So in a client engagement, I like to start there. I kind of force the emotional side of this. Like, let's recognize it. Let's call a spade, that there is a transactional element to building your business and to letting it go through an M&A process. Okay, that's practical. It's numbers. You know, we get it. But there's this emotional side. And it's amazing, Mark. I mean, I just released episode 150 for my podcast. And it comes up every single time I talk to an entrepreneur. There's emotion because we're human. And the emotions come all around. You know, it's not just at the end. It's even, and if we just talk about the end, well, what happens when you stay on and then you leave, right? So your transition is defined by you and by the buyer and what's right for you. Being clear about what you prefer, building that into your deal to the extent you can. And for people that live a rich life outside of the company, their identity is more than just, I'm the owner of this business, right? Or my name is on the door. 20% generally have that affiliation where their family name is on the door. And so, of course, identity is really, really important there. And it can make a big impact when it comes to the exit and how you feel about it when we think about regret. And a big mission I have is to help people have an exit without regret.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, you kind of hit it on the head. I see it a lot in financial planning where, you know, we can talk numbers, we can talk plans, this, that, running out of money, not running out of money. But the non-quantitative part of it, the emotional part, is really what's important. And where we, you know, say, well, throughout the planning process, it's, well, what's important to you? What are you trying to do? And how do we bake that into this? All right, this is what we'll do, or this is what the plan is. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that emotions really come into play with it, because like you said, it's something they've probably done for their whole, you know, run a business for their whole life or for a long period of time. And now you're kind of saying, not saying it, but they're thinking, okay, I'm going to flip a switch. And then, you know, one day I'll be business owner, and the next day I won't know what to, you know, I won't know what to do, or everything I've associated with is that business.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So we're just about out of time. Lori, I'd like to thank you for being on the show today. You should provide us some great, valuable insight about business transitions. How best can listeners reach out to you, learn more about what you do, and get in touch with you?
I think the best way is to go to my website. It's thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com. And on the website is my podcast, my book, and a new course that I'm launching called Endgame Entrepreneurship, Building with the Exit in Mind.
Great. We'll link to all that on the show notes. Thanks again, Lori. And thank you to everyone who tuned in today.
Don't forget to follow the Agent of Wealth on the platform you listen from and leave us a review of the show. We're currently accepting new clients. And if you'd like to schedule a one-on-one consultation with our advisors, please do so at boutisfinancial.com/call.
Thank you for listening to the Agent of Wealth podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Boutis Financial. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended to be a substitute for professional financial planning and investment advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investments and financial planning.